You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Last week, a study was published in the Sports Medicine Journal revealing that over an extended period, male high-level rugby players were more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease or other neurodegenerative diseases than the general population. This comes as increasing research and attention is being paid to head trauma and the way it affects the individual in the long term. I spoke to Dr. Stephanie D'Souza, co-author of the study and senior lecturer at the University of Auckland, about the study's results, what they tell us about head and brain injuries, and what that means for New Zealand's national sport. To get us started, what exactly are we seeing in this study?
So with this particular study, we had a group of about 13,000, almost 13,000 high-level rugby players. These were players that were playing at provincial or above, between 1950 to 2000, and we compared them to almost 2.4 million men from the general population. And what we found was a 22% increased risk of neurodegenerative diseases from clinical diagnoses. And this was particularly specific to Alzheimer's and other dementias in terms of long-term risk. And we do see this actually increased risk start to appear around age 70 onwards.
And what makes these neurodegenerative diseases in particular so concerning?
Great question. They can have quite a significant impact, obviously, on your long-term well-being. These are diseases that are linked to memory loss, loss of other functions. They can be quite significant in the way that they affect the people that are impacted, and eventually lead to the point of requiring, you know, significant care as well. So they have impact for the individual affected as well as their family members, and so making sure that there are ways to mitigate risk as much as possible and understand the what can lead to this risk is really important.
And in terms of public health outcomes, how significant is this increased risk in the wider scale of the New Zealand health system?
So in terms of understanding this, I guess, practically, like with the population that we looked at, say with the general population, if we took a 1,000 men, 52 of those men would develop a neurodegenerative disease. With the group that played rugby, we had 13 extra cases that developed this. So we are seeing this, you know, increased risk. It does indicate that the sporting organisations that are addressing that, you know, do need to be mindful that it exists, make sure that there are strategies to mitigate this risk from, you know, trying to reduce it as much as possible, and make sure that there's education as well for those affected, such as players.
And what about rugby and the nature of head injuries, does this study tell us?
So with these sort of collision sports, things like rugby, also other sports like American football, these associations between participating in the sport and later neurodegenerative disease risks, what is thought to underlie it is the number of head impacts that the individual has over their career. So it's, you know, cumulative head impacts, essentially. What we see, interestingly, with our study is that backline players have a greater risk of these later neurodegenerative diseases than the forwards, which is kind of unexpected given this hypothesis that I just mentioned, because forwards are the ones that are typically involved in more collision events and so would be exposed to more head impacts. Backs, however, tend to be faster and more agile players. So what our results seem to suggest is maybe it's not just the number of head impacts, but also the nature of the head impacts that could be contributing to increased risk as well. So faster, high-velocity impacts could also be a risk factor.
And what sort of concerns, given the popularity of rugby in Aotearoa, kind of exist about how frequently this is happening?
Yeah, great question. This is a very kind of emerging research space when it comes to rugby union. There's not actually a lot of research of this nature where we've got these sort of large cohorts and representative of the time, you know, of players at the time that we're looking at. this is the largest study that's been done. There's only been one other study that's looked at rugby union. But given how popular rugby is for New Zealand, it's such a, you know, so ingrained in the culture, it does kind of highlight that there is potentially some, you know, long-term risks that we need to be mindful of. It is something that we need to make sure that we're mitigating injuries and head impacts particularly. We don't know kind of the extent. What we're looking at here is players, as I mentioned, that were active from 1950 to 2000. So we don't know what this would extend to with more recent cohorts as well, and since the sport was professionalised. So the sport was only professionalised around from 1995 towards the end of when our players were active. So there could be differences in how what risk is looking like with more contemporary players. But it's also important to highlight with the sporting organisations, they've also gotten better at managing that. So, you know, it's just an ongoing space but that we need to be continuing to look into and understanding risk. But in the meantime, it's really important to try to make sure that we're mitigating risk as much as possible, educating players. I think trying to stop people from playing rugby is going to be very hard given our culture in New Zealand, but it is something that we need to be mindful of and trying to address and educate and minimise as much as possible.
You mentioned it there, but in terms of kind of what kind of research we have, and in particular what research we don't have, where do you kind of want to see this going, and where does the study fit?
So I did mention, we're not looking at more contemporary players. Just simply, firstly, that a lot of the players are not at an age yet where I guess they would have developed this. This is an older age condition. But one thing that we weren't able to do with our study was also look at women. It was just male players. And understanding what the risk is like for women is really important as well, particularly as we're seeing more and more women get into the sport. And there is some evidence that women may be more at risk of concussion and have a longer recovery from concussion. Female athletes specifically. So understanding what that is, say, not just for men, but for women, but also being able to, with our study, we are looking at an association, but we weren't able to get any sort of measure of, say, the number of head impacts the players had in their career and what, you know, understanding what that might look like in terms of the mechanism. So if we're able to get information like, the number of head impacts they had, concussion events, stand down periods, etc., to understand exactly what is underlying this association, that would be really valuable as well.
And with all that in mind, what do you want to see from across the sport from organisations like NZ Rugby or local sports bodies and clubs?
I know that New Zealand Rugby have certain protocols that they use and there's been changes that have been made. I think it's continuing to make sure those are fit for purpose for all players. This will be probably better addressed at the higher level of the sport, but it's important that even at more community level and non-professional levels that there are strategies in place to make sure that players are who are suspected of having a concussion are being proactively managed. Stand down periods following a concussion are you know enforced and adhered to, and that this sort of information is and research is ongoing and contributing to you know player understanding and education so that they're informed of the risks and benefits of the sport long term.
That was the University of Auckland's Stephanie D'Souza on rugby's impact on Alzheimer's risk.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.